I find that I'm fascinated.
In the annals of comedy history, there are many great double acts. Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Morecambe and Wise, the two Ronnies, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, Cannon and Ball, Little and Large, Fry and Laurie, Hale and Pace, Smith and Jones, Rick Mayall and Adrian Edmondson, Newman and Bedeal, Bedeal and Skinner, Lee and Herring, Adam and Joe, Mitchell and Webb, Armstrong and Miller, the Chuckle Brothers. Oh, the list goes on and on, friends. And to that ever-expanding list, we surely must add now Konstantin Kissin and Francis Forster. Although, there's always been this sense that in this particular double act, it's a little bit like George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley, isn't it? It's like Kissin is the one that talks. Kissin is the one who gets the question time slot and is the one who's shoved in your face all the time. Not sure why, because he's not particularly insightful or charismatic or good-looking or funny, but that's a question for another day. And then there's the other one who doesn't really say anything. He's like, it's like the Pet Shop Boys. You know, there was the one who sung and there was the one who just was in the background. Or the Eurythmics, where Dave Stewart just kind of was in the background. But at least we know Dave Stewart wrote the music. One is not even sure if Francis Forster writes any of the material that he comes out with or has any ideas of his own. In fact, it's taken quite a lot of people quite a lot of time to figure out just what it is that Francis Forster brings to the table. Some people have even started to pen their own fan fiction, where it is imagined that the relationship between Forster and Kissin is much like the relationship between Ramsay Bolton and Reek. Others have surmised that he's somewhat like the Gimp in Pulp Fiction, kept in a box under the stairs or something and brought out only when it's time to do a show. Come on, Francis, trigonometry's on. However, the truth is even more sad and more pathetic. Turns out that Francis has his own YouTube channel. Now, considering that Trigonometry have over 1 million subscribers, the fact that it's only got 5,000 followers seems a little bit sad, but he is trying, bless him. But I just get the impression that he kind of is conscious of what he's up to. He's along for the ride and is basically content to be the second man in this duo, bringing basically nothing to the table. We don't know if he even gets paid for Trigonometry. Some have speculated that he may get £50 a show, £100 a show, something like that. But who are we to know? Now, there is actually a point to this video, because while I was having a look around to try to get a handle on what it is that Francis Forster believes, I came across a video that he made on racial segregation, which we're going to take a look at in a moment. Now, we shouldn't be that surprised as to his general views on this matter. He's into the Martin Luther King line. Because I remember back in the day, he staged an intervention on his old friend Chris Dangerfield, worried that Dangerfield was going into quote-unquote dark and scary places. Because he had the temerity to care about the fate of the native British people. Oh, what a cad, what a bounder that Dangerfield is. Well, anyway, without further ado, let's have a look at this video.
There are many terrible ideas we should never, ever revisit.
Here we go.
Communism, fascism, racial segregation, the mullet. But as we all know, human beings...
Ah, yeah, racial segregation was just an idea that somebody came up with one day and they decided to impose it on the rest of society in the same way as communism. That's not really true, unfortunately. This is, again, what I like to call the James Lindsay theory of history, abstracted from actual lived reality. Segregation is actually something that has existed in every time, every place, still exists today, all over the world. And if you don't believe me, here's world-renowned black economist Thomas Sowell from his book Applied Economics.
Racial segregation. The residential clustering or segregation of particular groups has been the rule, rather than the exception, in countries around the world and over the centuries. While this has been strikingly visible to the naked eye when groups were different in appearance, as with blacks and whites in the United States, the same phenomenon has been common where the differences could not be seen with the naked eye. Sometimes the groups cluster spontaneously, and sometimes they are found clustered because they have been rejected by other groups who don't want them living in their neighborhoods, and sometimes governing authorities assign them to separate living areas. The term ghetto originated centuries ago in Europe to describe the neighborhoods where Jews were confined, sometimes behind walls that were closed off at night. But Igbos from southern Nigeria were likewise confined to separate neighborhoods in northern Nigeria, even though both groups were black Africans, whom others might have had difficulty telling apart. In earlier centuries, the Chinese minorities in Southeast Asia were often likewise confined to neighborhoods prescribed by the ruling authorities, rather than being allowed to live at random among the indigenous populations or among their European overlords. In late 20th century Brazil, where racial distinctions were broken down into browns, blacks, and whites, the browns and blacks were more residentially separate from one another than the browns were from the whites. However, this was not a result of orders from political authorities. In late 20th century America, it was found that 51.65% of the population of Southern European origin would have to be redistributed in order to achieve full integration with the Northern European population.
Anyway, to be fair, he's only spoken for 13 seconds so far, and I interrupted him and slammed him with a bit of Thomas Sowell. So let's see what else Francis has to say.
Human beings are idiots doomed to repeat the same mistakes over and over, creating more and more misery and suffering. But that's enough about the mullet. There's something worse. We now have a new generation of idiots who think it's a good idea to separate people on the grounds of race. Because, as we all know, Martin Luther King's ideas were trash. And, most disgustingly of all, he was a cis heterosexual man with internalized whiteness.
Now, here's the thing. What if Martin Luther King's ideas were trash? I'm just going to throw it out there. You know, what Francis is leaving out of this story is quite a bit. For example, when they ended the segregation in the schools in America, people had to be forced by gunpoint to go into mixed-race schools. And then, again, this is often left out of accounts of desegregation, which happened in the 50s and the 60s, and the busing, you know, they literally bussed people into the schools, is that there was a separate ruling, a second ruling called Millikan and Bradley, which sanctioned a form of segregation, and it kept many areas in the north of the country, New York, Detroit, Chicago, basically all of the northern towns, de facto segregated. And today, there's something called a segregation index. And the most segregated cities in America are LA, Philadelphia, New York City, where you don't just get black-white segregation, you get white-Hispanic segregation, white-Asian segregation. In New York, you have Jewish-only areas. At their own request, by the way, Jewish-only schools, at their own request, by the way, because there's a tendency for people, ethnic groups, to separate, to segregate in this, in this way. It's like oil and water. There's a natural tendency for them to want to live apart. And as Thomas Sowell quotation mentioned there, this actually, even if you then start to try to force these groups together, when one group moves in, generally the poorer group, the existing group tends to move away. And that is, and they call that phenomena white flight. But there's also black flight as well. And there's Asian flight. And there's every other sort of flight when you get this. And there's even, as Sowell was trying to talk about in that clip, there is more hidden forms of it. So you can get like two different European groups who don't like each other moving away from each other. Or you can even get a flight away from, you know, middle-class flight away from a working class. You know, you can get it on that level too. Because surprise, surprise, people want what is best for themselves and for their own family. And if you have some other group moving in who has, you know, different way of life or different, they speak a different language, or they commit a crime at a higher rate, or even simple things like they don't keep their gardens nicely, they don't paint their houses, they don't paint their fences. People don't want, like, that area feels like it's coming down. So there's a natural tendency then to move away. And you can actually see this with your own eyes if you move around parts of London. You can actually see the different standards by which different groups keep their houses and their gardens. You can see it everywhere. So this idea that segregation is an idea, and this idea that it is Martin Luther King's idea that everybody should be mingled together as a good thing, I don't know. I mean, the two questions I would ask is, has it ever actually existed on any great scale? A lot of studies suggest that in Chicago, it utterly failed. In New York, it utterly failed. In LA, it has utterly failed. You know, most people, even now in America, live in ethnic enclaves. Most people in the world live in ethnic enclaves. Even if you go into London, there are stark differences between, you know, one street and another street, depending on, you know, the types of people who live there. Because people have a tendency to want to be with their own. And Francis doesn't seem to like that. He seems to think that that's a really terrible idea. But this is just what people are like. This is the raw material that you have to deal with. So in a sense, it's like lamenting the fact that, you know, a rooster crows, or, you know, the fact that wolves hunt in packs and howl at the moon. You know, I don't really understand, you know, the anger that he has here. But anyway, let's carry on.
Which means he was one step up from the KKK and practically Hitler. Most of the idiots who support these ideas are communists, and in a few years will probably be marching through the streets, brandishing placards saying things like, Nelson Mandela was a coconut, and real apartheid has never been tried. Finally, something progressives and the far right agree on.
Well, I mean, you know, we do have this saying sometimes that the woke are sometimes more right than these people. I mean, what if there is some truth to the fact that Martin Luther King was espousing, you know, essentially white liberal ideas? Certainly that's what many people within the black community thought at the time. It's what people like Malcolm X would have thought at the time. It's what people like Muhammad Ali would have thought at the time and said on national television. It's what many black nationalists thought at the time. So, you know, and it was only ever supported by a small minority of elites. So, I mean, he's treating it as preposterous. He's treating it as kind of self-evidently stupid. But he never stops to ask, well, why is it that people have this tendency? And why is it that these things keep on coming back? Why is it in all of history you only have this tiny little window from about when was the civil rights movement? 1964 up until, you know, we're talking less than 70 years. And even in that time, as I mentioned, it hasn't actually manifested. You still have de facto segregation all across America. You know, that ruling I mentioned basically said if you move to the suburbs, yeah, the desegregation rules don't apply anymore. You know, you have segregation in this country. You've got state schools, but there are also catchment areas, as everybody knows. So there is de facto segregation on wealth lines in many cases. Right? So, I mean, it's kind of what I'm saying is he is scoffing. He is saying that these wokesters are off their tree, or these wokesters are, somehow like the real fools. But actually, the position he's defending is pretty pie in the sky and is actually not manifested. The situation that the wokesters are driving towards is the historical norm. It is the historical norm. So anyway, let's carry on.
That and the fact that they don't like the Jews. Before long, they'll create a new political movement that molds socialism with nationalism. Call it the National Socialist Party and unleash it on the political landscape. What could go wrong? Like all terrible ideas, this...
So the real threat of people wanting their own ethnic spaces is that it could lead somehow to the wokesters re-establishing Nazism. That's literally the argument he just came across. You know, that's what he just said. But I mean, the group that he just mentioned are among the most self-selecting and segregous, if you want to put it that way, in America. If you have a look at the areas that the American Jewish population, you know, lives in, that they tend not to be mixed. They tend to be in their own little enclaves. And this is how it's always been, it's just been that way everywhere, because they too like to be, you know, in their own spaces run by themselves. This is literally what the war in the Middle East that presumably Francis actually supports is about. So it's weird that he just brought that up willy-nilly as well. But anyway, let's carry on.
Minted approach to race relations started on university campuses. At MIT in 1975, a black-only dorm was created that was called Chocolate City. Now, let's ignore the fact that chocolates...
Yeah, the idea of black people wanting to be in their own spaces started on a campus in 1975. Yeah. Really, the idea that black people wanted their own spaces started on a campus in 1975 in this place, Chocolate City. Like, these people do not think about what they're saying half of the time. It is absolute rubbish that these guys are slinging here. Again, you can turn to the works of Thomas Sowell, who has probably written on this topic more than any living person, and you can see there were dozens and dozens of attempts to set up black-only spaces, black-only schools, even after desegregation. And in many cases, they did quite well too, which is been, again, part of Sowell's lifelong struggle. But anyway, let's carry on.
City sounds like a genre of porn films made for the gentleman who enjoys a darker lady. Oh, that, or brilliant. A theme park frequented only by fat people.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, what, roaring with laughter, aren't you?
I can imagine a whole troop of fat women descending on Chocolate City and being profoundly disappointed by what they found. The men of Chocolate City, on the other hand, would be delighted, as they love a larger lady. even more than arriving a couple of hours late to a scheduled appointment. But the most...
This is awful, isn't it? It's awful. Dare I say it? Is Francis stereotyping? Because the men in Chocolate City, of course, would be black, and he's suggesting they like a larger lady. Sounds like a bit of a stereotype to me, but anyway, let's carry on.
The most demented thing about Chocolate City is the description of the dorm. Chocolate City is a brotherhood of MIT students and alumni who identify with urban culture and share common backgrounds, interests, ethnicities, and or experiences.
What's wrong with that? That sounds like a pretty good reason to want to hang out. I want to hang out with people with shared background experiences and things too, because we've got more in common and therefore we want to hang out more. I don't see really on the face of it what the problem is.
Every rich white boy who grows up in an affluent suburb identifies with urban culture. Probably far more than the black boys.
No, they don't. Every rich white boy who grows up in an affluent area does not automatically identify with urban culture. What sort of ridiculous thing is that to say? Many of them will identify with the music of Mozart and Beethoven. Many of them will be into heavy metal. Many of them will have no interest whatsoever in urban culture. So again, I mean, he's just making these assertions willy-nilly, no evidence or anything. Fucking stupid.
Living in those estates who don't like the fact that they have to live there and just want to get the hell out.
This is just bollocks though, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to... The law of averages says if you take a random person from, you know, a social housing estate in America, housing project in America, black guy, and an affluent white guy from 100 miles down the road, say, the chances are the black dude's going to be into the urban music and the rap, and the white guy is not going to be into those things. Fucking mental. Like, in Francis Forster world, every single person who lives in a black neighborhood is in Dangerous Minds, you know, with Michelle Pfeiffer trying to give them a ladder up to a better life or something. They're looking to escape. What if many of them are not looking to escape? For many people, it will be their homes. For many people, their brothers are their brothers, and they don't want to escape because that's what they know. That's their life. So I guess what I'm trying to show here is the number of assumptions, completely unfounded assumptions, that Forster is bringing to his analysis here. This video went out to the million subs, 61,000 people watched this. It is shocking how shallow his analysis is here. So in a way, it's good that he doesn't talk, because it's another shit he comes out with.
But this word salad is used to justify racial segregation, and we're starting to see other places embrace this idea.
It wasn't word salad, though. They said, oh, we've got shared background, shared experiences, shared culture, and we want to hang out together. That's not word salad. It's basic human nature.
A London theatre recently announced they were going to host a couple of performances of Slave Play for black-identifying audiences. What does black-identifying even mean? If I identify as black, will I be let in? Will Rachel Dolezal be allowed to attend? What happens if I get a tan and perm my hair? Is that offensive, or will it make my transition more authentic? And if I become black, will that mean I'll be allowed to sing along to n****s in Paris without being cancelled? You better fucking bleep that word. It's all incredibly confusing. The director of the play, Jeremy O. Harris, who identified...
It's not confusing. He's a black ethno-narcissist who wants only black people to go and watch his play. And it's not confusing at all, is it? I mean, again, it's a stupid idea to do that in the West End. mainly because the types of people to go to the West End, on average, are unlikely to be black, and the population of Britain is, what, 3% black. Now, many of those people are in London, so there'll be a higher percentage in London. Still a pretty stupid idea, if you ask me, because you're basically cutting off a huge percentage of your audience if you make it black only. So from a business point of view, it's a bad idea. But politically, I understand what he's doing. He's a black ethno-narcissist, right? I mean, and he only wants his own people to watch his work, to make some sort of statement about how black people don't go to the theatre, right? It's not that complicated.
As both black and retarded, says that working class and black people need to be radically invited into the theatre.
On Broadway, there were nights where tickets were only sold to people who identified as black. Are you going to do that in the West End?
I'm so excited to, yeah.
You are?
Yeah. Poor people and black people have been told that they do not belong inside of the theater. In America, Jim Crow existed to literally tell them that they could not sit in the same theater as white people.
Unless you're white and working class, in which case you can piss off, pay full whack for ticket prices. As white privilege means that you've got more disposable income than Meghan Markle when she first got her hands on Harry's credit card. What these people never seem to understand is that when you begin to segregate people into racial groups, it never ends well. No one has ever said the words, "Ever since that country started implementing racial segregation, life has got so much better."
I bet they have, actually. I bet people have said that. I mean, I don't know, again, where he's pulling, like, he is just assuming the life got worse in places where they did that. I can imagine many scenarios where people were like, would be like, yeah, things are a lot better. Again, I'll mention Thomas Sowell. He shows that even for the black community, things were better when things were segregated for them. So I'm not saying that I support, this law or that law, value-free analysis as always. I'm just showing the paucity of Francis Forster's argumentation here. I mean, he's basically asserting things with no evidence. There were many people in a certain country in Europe who thought life had got better when they implemented certain racial laws. That's just a fact. So, I mean, I guess the real question depends on, are you allowed in to the space or are you allowed out of it? And do you benefit from being, included or excluded? Right? So that's a case-by-case basis. But you can't just willy-nilly say nobody ever said things weren't improved. I bet you there are people, I mean, those people in South Africa who set up that town, that little enclave, I forget what it's called now, clearly have a better standard of living than before they did that. So, I mean, it's, we could even look at certain other cases. Again, you can look at apartheid Africa, South Africa, and post-apartheid South Africa. Many people, this is a fact, a significant portion of the population in South Africa, black as well as white, say life was better before Nelson Mandela came along. These are just facts. But Francis is not interested in facts. He's just interested in, willy-nilly just assuming that his particular liberal 1960s ideals are the only ones and that they lead to a better outcomes and better life for people. But that's just not true. None of this is founded on anything other than flaccid assertions by him.
There's a reason we study history. It's so we can judge historical figures using the standards of the present day and destroy their legacy. Then we throw their statue into the river, burn their books, and slash their paintings. It's the only way to stop fascism. But the other reason we study history is so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. The great thing about our education system is that we're producing a whole
Hold on a second. All of the things that Francis Forster presumably championsall of the great inventions of the past, all of the moments of upswing, happened under circumstances where basically all the races were segregated. So, I mean, on this rubric, the only time in history we can properly kind of say that there were achievements and things were going upwards was, you know, from about 1964 to now. Really, this is what he thinks? I don't think he does think this.
...of people who can't read, let alone understand history. And that means we've got a brave new world of insanity awaiting us. Because if you think the way to make the arts accessible for low-income groups is to racially segregate, then I hate to think how you're going to solve the really complex problems in society.
But, I mean, there's no... Again, it's on a value-free basis. It would, I mean, if you gave certain segments of society free tickets to the theatre, it would make it more accessible, wouldn't it? And if you say, well, the criteria to get in is you have to be part of this group and you get a freebie. Let's say if you're black, you get a freebie to come to the theatre. It would actually increase access for those kids, wouldn't it? I just don't see any way around that. Anyway, let's carry on.
Maybe we combat climate change by throwing soup at priceless works of art, bring peace to the Middle East by embracing radical Islam, or stop sexual violence by suggesting men should be forced to live under a curfew. Hang on. We've already done all of those things. Although the Green Party peer who dreamt up the curfew idea admitted she was
not being altogether serious.
Proof that vegans aren't, never have been, and never will be funny. When you're that deficient in nutrients, the last thing you're going to be able to do is come up with witty jokes, because you've used...
I will say, just aside from the central argument here, this video is appalling. This is atrocious content. It's atrocious. I'm sorry, trigonometry. This is bad.
All your energy up on being self-righteous. And that's how we've got ourselves in this mess. Everyone wants to show how they're doing the right thing. It doesn't actually matter if what you're doing is incredibly destructive. All that's important is how you're perceived.
But I still don't really see how it would be that destructive to say, I don't know, have a theatre showing where only black people go. Why would that be destructive? He has not sufficiently demonstrated the case that racial segregation necessarily leads to disaster. Has he? I mean, he's basically throwing away 5,000 years of human history and saying the only time where we had things figured out was from Martin Luther King to now. A time in which Britain has experienced severe decline, a time in which America has experienced, political volatility like it's never seen before, a time in which America has experienced severe decline, a time in which other nations who do not have these liberal ideas about the world, like the Chinese, for example, who are pretty ethnocentric themselves, have experienced increases in their prosperity. So again, the point is not demonstrated at all. He has merely asserted it using platitudes throughout this video.
Perception is everything. And if you're reintroducing apartheid, then who cares? As long as liberals think you're cool. Because that's what really counts. Anyway, I'm off to attend a support group called Perverts for Palestine, where members of an oppressed community meet up to swap hard drives and discuss how wearing
One of the great ironies of this video is that now he's like, there's always this angle where he's trying to get back to signaling his support for Israel in some way. But the irony is that the Palestinians are segregated. They are literally segregated into that area of Gaza, which, even before it was bombed by the Israelis, and into that part of the West Bank, and you literally have to go through a security gate on a wall to get into Israel. So they literally are segregated there. But, you know, he supports that.
He takes fetish gear in public, helps stop the genocide.
Also, I have to go back here. That stuff I said about the GIMP, he literally put it in his own video. Anyway, this was this I thought was interesting. I have to say, my expectations coming into this were low, but this was even worse because this was basically a video which is entirely devoid of any facts whatsoever. It was merely Francis Forster saying, I believe in the values of Martin Luther King, and I am arbitrarily going to decide that any journey away from the ideals of Martin Luther King leads directly to disaster. I mean, his argument basically here was any step towards racial segregation leads directly to Hitler. Do not pass go. That was basically his argument, which is not a good argument, is it? And it's not a good argument because, as I mentioned, there is already racial segregation all around the world, in this country and in America. De facto segregation. Everybody knows it too. And if you start naming parts of the country, you'll know which ethnic groups live there. Hounslow, as one example, not a white area, is it? Essex, as an example, not an Indian area, is it? You know, I mean, people have this habit of living among their own. Francis doesn't like that. I'm not even convinced, by the way, that Martin Luther King was against it. I think when Martin Luther King was making his speeches and so on, he never imagined this kind of melting pot where there'd be white people and black people all living in the same neighborhood. That's not what he was talking about at all. So even Martin Luther King could be mischaracterized through this, but let's just pretend that is what Martin Luther King wanted. Just because he's Martin Luther King doesn't mean he had all the right ideas. Because where is this thinking led us? Nowhere good, I would argue. Anyway, till next time, everybody. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.